Dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashantinilam, the most happening place on the planet. And yes, Shivaratri is just a few days away. Shiva consciousness is in the air, everywhere. And I thought this is perhaps the best time to dwell on the life of a Shaivite saint. And Bhagwan sent to the studio a Radiosai volunteer, Mrs. Lalita Shekhar. And we spent 4 hours dwelling on the sublime life of Saint Manika Vasagar. What I'm going to do today is share with you the first part of this discussion. The first 40-45 minutes are about Shiva and about Shivaratri, because we thought let us first dwell on Shiva and then go on to his devotee. So you're going to now listen to the first part of how Saint Manikya Vasagar melted into Shiva. I'm Team Radio Sai Bishu. The time in the studios now is 8:41. Do soak yourself in this beautiful journey to Shiva consciousness.
Tune into Sai. Spend the day with Sai. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Sai Ram, and welcome to the fourth episode of our series, Saints, the Soul of India. We had the first episode on January 7th, 2016. We began the first Thursday Live episode in the new year with this new series. It was the time of the Indian lunar month of Margali, when the devout in South India with great reverence recall and ruminate on the elevating life of Saint Andal. In fact, this is the period when Saint Andal's divinely inspired immortal work, Tirupavai, is chanted in every home and in every temple, especially in the state of Tamil Nadu and in all Tamil-speaking homes. And we had the second discussion only on the Tirupavai in the second episode of this series. And for both these episodes, Bhagwan sent 2 dedicated Radio Sai volunteers to the studio. For the first discussion, we had Mrs. Lalita Shekhar. And for the second, we had Mrs. Akhila Sitaram, both from Bangalore. The third episode in this series was on January 25th, 2016. And that day happened to be the day when world over musicians trained in classical Carnatic music offer their salutations and homage to one of the founding fathers of Carnatic music, Saint Tyagaraja. It was the Tyagaraja Aradhana Day, and we had a session wherein Brother Kota Shivakumar shared his insights on the 5 masterpieces of Saint Tyagaraja, the Pancharatna Kritis. He deliberated on how these 5 crest jewels of Carnatic music connect so beautifully to the 5 human values. So that's what we did in the third episode, and now we are in the fourth episode, and in a few days is the supremely sanctifying festival of Shivaratri, a time when we should lose ourselves in the Shiva consciousness. And how do we do this? How do we attain that eternal bliss of being one with the Shiva consciousness? We thought it would be great if we could take inspiration from the lives of those who have done this, who have lived this, who have experienced this. Because again, I go back to the genesis of this series. Many years ago, when Mrs. Rani Subramanyam, a great devotee of Bhagwan, a very sincere spiritual seeker, when she asked Swami, if I should do some reading or some spiritual exercise that will help me in my spiritual growth, Swami said, if you really want to read, don't read any books on philosophy. Read the lives of saints. Because philosophies and interpretations by different people will only confuse you. But the lives of the saints, through their very journey to God, through their very example, they will give you glimpses of what you are going to face in your spiritual path. You will learn lessons from their life, because their lives are essays of how it is when you walk on the spiritual path. You will get inspiration from their lives. You will know the ups and downs that they went through, and through that, you will get your guidance and you will know how to emerge victorious. Actually, in this spirit, we started this series, and today to dwell on the life of a Shaivite saint, Bhagwan has again graciously sent to the studios Mrs. Lalita Shekhar, the one with whom we started this series. We are the first episode on Andal, and I'm really grateful to Bhagwan that he has arranged this so beautifully. So welcome Mrs. Lalita Shekhar once again to Saints, the Soul of India.
Sairam Vishu, I'm very, very glad to be here again. As you said, Swami has been very gracious and he had sent me back to the studio to do this with you. And Sairam to all our listeners.
Now, before we go on to the life of a Shaivite saint, can we dwell a little on Shivaratri itself? Can we dwell on the Shiva principle?
Of course. When we are going to learn from, as you rightly said, when we are going to learn from a Shaivite saint and his life, it is only at that first we try to contemplate on the Lord or his Ishtadeva, the form that he contemplated on.
And you know, it's very interesting if you notice that this year, 2016, Shivaratri falls on a Monday.
Oh yes, Monday, that is very auspicious for Lord Shiva.
Yeah, for Lord Shiva. It is a Somavara, as the Mondays are called in Indian languages. And Bhagwan says that Shiva is called Someshwara.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if you think about the life of Bhagwan, Swami also was born on a Somavara.
Yes.
On the Kartika Somavara.
Right. Kartika Masa, which is very, very important for Lord Shiva.
Correct.
And that to Somavara, which is dedicated to the worship of Lord Shiva.
And in the very auspicious early hours of the morning, when the entire village of Puttaparthi was immersed in chanting the hymns in praise of Lord Shiva, that's when Lord Shiva Sai decided to descend on this sacred land of Puttaparthi. And of course, in the later years, everything became crystal clear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Bhagwan, in June of 1963, made that historic announcement, saying that he indeed is the Shiva Shakti Avatar. And we know how Shivaratri has always been such a significant festival in Prashantalam, right from the 1940s.
Right, so much. So much so that everyone has their own experiences of Lingodvam, and that's a very spectacle to see. We cannot put it in words, the feeling that we get. We can only experience it. We cannot explain it.
Atmalingam bhajare yati, adbhutalingam bhajare. Atmalingam bhajare yati, adbhutalingam bhajare. Thank you. ఈశ్వరలింగం భజరే.
Even the message that Swami used to give about the importance of this day, Shivratri, and that is also very, very pertinent. You were mentioning about Somavara, the Monday. Soma also means moon.
Yes.
Yes. And Shivratri is so very closely associated with the moon and the waning of the moon, if you observed. And naturally, when Shivratri is connected with the moon, is because Shiva is also connected with the moon.
Yes.
And Swami used to say that Shivratri literally means the night of Shiva. And unlike any other nights, this particular night is the night of consecration, of dedication and illumination. And if we look at it, Bishu, it's a very auspicious day. It falls on the 14th day of the lunar fortnight. If we know, every month is divided into two fortnights according to Hindu calendar. And this Shivratri falls on the 14th day of the lunar fortnight, where the moon is continuously waning. After the full moon day, the moon starts to wane. And on the 14th day, after the full moon day, the moon is hardly visible. So they say that moon loses 1/16th of his brilliance every day. And as he continues on the 14th day, he has only 1/16th of his power. So, and moon is very closely associated with the mind,
yes,
the human mind. It is said that Chandrama Manaso Jataha. And we believe that moon affects the human mind in many ways. And this vain moon may be understood as a mind that is, with all its waywardness, reduced by conquering it with our sadhana.
So I think this is a time when the moon's power, moon is at the lowest.
Yes.
And because the moon is at its lowest, the mind is also at its lowest. I mean, it's easier to control the
Control the mind, yes. Because only a fragment of your mind is left out. And it is very easy for us to control it and divert it into the right path, the spiritual path. And how do we do that is, again, as it is said, we keep vigil all through the night on Shivratri day. And all of our Sai devotees, all the listeners know that bhajans happen all through the night in everywhere, basically in all the Sai centers and especially in Prashanti. And some of us also keep fasting and we dwell on the glory of the God all the time, all through the night. So if we look at it, this is symbolic of the eternal and constant vigil that we have to keep on our mind all through our lives. It's not just, if we look at Shivratri as a night that is dedicated to Shiva, whatever we do on that particular night should be continued all through the life.
That is what is symbolized when we are having Akhanda Bhajan.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is what Bhagwan wants to communicate to us, that how you have this Akhanda Bhajan, that's how you should have this continuous, ceaseless striving to mm-hmm. be in the Shiva consciousness.
Mahadeva Shiva Shambho Shankara.
as you mentioned, you know, people fast, and I think that is just again symbolic of, you know, how you should fast your senses of everything else and just offer it only to God.
Yeah. It is like divesting the senses of the pleasures that they are always craving for.
Yes.
You know, by keeping the fast. And in simple words, if we look at it, sealing on desires, you know.
Yes.
Reduce your desires.
And just let all your desires be sublimated to the divine.
To the divine. Yes, very much. And as you rightly said, the bhajan that happens all through the night is also a message that we should only contemplate on Lord's name and, you know, Lord's glory. And we should not let our mind get distracted from Him. Be in the world, do your duties, but do not get into the world so much that you forget what is your ultimate goal. You forget the divine. So all the time, be connected with the divinity.
Yes.
In whatever name and form that you...
But actually this happens every month, isn't it?
Yes, it happens every month. It is called Masa Shivaratri. That is, monthly once the Shivaratri happens. Because monthly once the moon wanes and it reaches its... But in the month of Magha, this is said to be most auspicious. And this is the main Shivaratri that happens annually, once in a year. That is called Mahashivaratri.
The most propitious time, the most opportune moment to connect with Shiva, the most propitious time to tame your mind and totally melt into Shiva.
Yes, to rededicate ourselves to His glory and surrender the mind to Him.
Priyakam mano vinasha pulakam sadashivam vajamyam sakala lokanayakam sujana citta priyakam mano vinasha pulakam Sureshwaram Ganeshwaram sanadanatmamarcham namamitam Maheshwaram smaramitai Shankaram namamitam Maheshwaram smaramitai
Wow, any chant on Shiva, any song on Shiva always has so much power, you know, it effortlessly sublimates you, sublimates your feelings, sublimates your thoughts. And in fact, the very imagery of Shiva is like that, isn't it?
Yes.
If you just chant to yourself and just say Shivoham, Shivoham, that itself will quieten your senses. That itself will sort of sublimate so many of your tendencies, isn't it?
Right.
It is so powerful, that imagery. In fact, I remember in 2002 Shivaratri discourse, Bhagwan began his talk with a very beautiful description of Shiva. And you know, Bhagwan went on to sing and say, with the crescent moon dancing, the matted locks waving, the cool waters of the Ganga flowing between, with the eye in the middle of the forehead shining, the purple neck gleaming like the sheen of a blackberry, wearing serpent bracelets and snakeskin belt, the entire body smeared with vibhuti, the forehead adorned with kumkum dot, lips red by the juice of the beetle, gold embellished diamond earrings dangling, and the whole swarthy body glowing, glowing with the glow of the ash, the Lord of Kailasha appeared in person. You know, that's how Bhagwan...
Beautiful. So that
beautiful.
Is one instant when we got to listen Parameshwara describing himself.
Yeah, absolutely.
மௌழிகள் கெடு சந்திரமர் கண்ட கணத்தோட மௌழிகள் கெடு சந்திரமர் கண்ட கணத்தோட மௌழிகள் கெடு சந்திரமர் கண்ட கணத்தோட பெனதாறு கும்பெடு ஜடலத்தோட జడలలో ప్రవహించు చలలేటి జీవితోడ డంబైన కాల నేత్రముతోడ నల్ల నేరుడు వంటి నల్లని మెడతోడు కరమున నాగ కంకణముతోడ నడుమున చుట్టిన నాగ చర్మముతోడ మై నిండ నలదు భస్మంబుతోడ కుదురు తెచ్చిన దొడ్డ కుంకుమ బొట్టుతో తాంబూల రాగాయంబుతో తటహేమమయ వజ్ర తాటంకములతోడ వీక్షాశ్రమద్దయ వృష్టితోడ నల్ల కొలువలు దునుమాడి కొల్లలాడు మెరుగు చామన ఛాయల మేనితోడ నల్ల కొలువలు దునుమాడి కొల్లలాడు మెరుగు చామన ఛాయల మేనితోడ శైల రాజేంద్రుడు శైల రాజేంద్రుడు నేడు ప్రత్యక్షమాయను శైల రాజేంద్రుడు నేడు ప్రత్యక్షమాయను
ఇన్ఫాక్ట్ యాజ్ యు సెడ్ శివాస్ ఫార్మ్ ఇస్ సో యునిక్ And I was thinking when you are talking, even if we close our eyes for a few moments, a few seconds, and try to imagine Shiva sitting in his posture of dhyanam, doing meditation, and he is the Adi Yogi, the first yogi ever.
Hmm.
And most of the times we see Shiva either with his family or sitting alone and meditating. And even if we imagine his form, his half-closed eyes, and he's so peacefully and serenely sitting and meditating, and you start to feel so peaceful inside. That inner peace, it takes over you. And he's so simple, and simplicity is real beauty.
Mm.
And his form is so beautiful that so many saints and sages and so many of them had, they got attracted towards his form and they sang praises of his beauty and divinity. In fact, it is very interesting to know that Gauranga, who is a great devotee of Krishna, in fact, he loves Krishna so much that anybody used to mention the name Krishna, he used to lose his consciousness with happiness and joy.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
That is why he is called Krishna Chaitanya,
Who
loses his consciousness in Krishna.
Wow.
Gauranga is also called Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Hopefully, one day we can do an episode on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and saints the soul of
Why not? If Swami so wishes, definitely.
Yes. Yeah.
So, he being such a great and ardent devotee of Krishna, could not resist himself from getting attracted to the form of Shiva.
Oh, is it?
Yes. And he had composed a beautiful Shivashtakam in the praise of Lord Shiva.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple of stanzas from the Shivashtakam, the meaning of the stanzas, of course. I would like to read it out for our listeners. Salutations and salutations to him who has moon, sun and fire as his eyes, who is the universal Shiva who dispels darkness. And who, by his thousand-beamed power, defeats thousands of moons and suns. Salutations and salutations to him, whose form shines like the gem in the head of the king of snakes, who wears the skin of tiger, who has an effulgent form, who stands amidst a lotus with 1,000 petals, and who wears lustrous amulets in his two hands. And he goes on to describe Lord Shiva in all his simplicity and beauty.
This is Shivashtakam.
This is Gauranga's Shivashtakam.
Gauranga's Shivashtakam. So there are 8 stanzas, right?
There are 8 stanzas.
And each stanza is only describing the form
each
of Shiva.
Each stanza is only describing the form of Shiva and how by meditating on Shiva, we can get to attain even Hari. You know, Hara and Hari.
Hari, yes.
So it is very beautiful.
Amazing.
Like this, there are many songs and chants that describe the beauty and sublimity and mahima of Lord Shiva.
The mahima and the enigma.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, enigma, right. And mysterious.
Yes.
He is very mysterious. Though he looks so simple, there is a lot of mystery associated with Lord Shiva.
Absolutely.
In fact, every Shivratri, when in Prashanti Nilayam, the boys sing praises of Shiva.
Yes.
Of course, you are part of them, so you know. But that is some part that I used to love, you know. All the boys sitting and Swami is sitting there and boys are sitting in front of him, keeping Maheshwara in front of them. They all sing praises of Lord Shiva, Lingashtakam and Shiva Panchakshari Stotram, and so many stotras on Lord Shiva. One of the most favorite things for me during Shivratri.
Absolutely. In fact, as you mentioned that, I'm tempted to relive those moments, you know, mind goes back to those really very, very blissful moments, because all these saints, they visualized Shiva and they composed or they sang to him. But actually, the students and the devotees here, you had the opportunity to actually see Shiva.
Yes.
And chant the Lingashtakam, chant the Bilvashtakam, chant the Vishwanathashtakam.
Tritalam Trigunakaram Trivedram Chadriyayudham Ekabilvam Shivarpanam Trishakre Bilvapatraisha Achitre Komalai Shubhai Tavapujam Karishyami Ekabilvam Shivarpanam Kanya Mahararam Tila Parvata Kotayaha Kanchanam Shailadaya Ekabilvam Shivarpanam Kashi Kshetra Nivasam Cha Kalabhairava Darshanam Ekabilvam Shivarpanam Induvare Vratam Sitva Niraharo Maheshwarah.
I remember in most Shivratri mornings when Swami would sit on the chair and as the stotrams would begin, you know, the atmosphere used to be so serene because the chants are so powerful, you know. The chants by themselves are so imbued with peace. And you are seeing the very form of peace sitting in front of you. And most often what would happen is Swami, he would sit and he would close his eyes and for a little while, you know, his hand would move gently in the air. And even that would stop.
He will become still.
Yeah, you would become completely still.
And along with him, our minds also become still for a moment.
Like, you're just sitting in front of him who is that Shiva personified. And he's completely still. And after a while, you know, you just become statue. And you know, Bhagwan, I remember he used to say that when I'm with men, I'm man. When I'm with woman, I'm a woman. When I'm with children, I'm a child. But when I'm alone, I'm God, he used to say. And you know, to me, those were the kind of God moments. He's just bliss. He's that being awareness, bliss, Atman, which Bhagwan used to say. He used to be just that bliss. Whenever you imagine that scene, effortlessly, you know, you are transported into Kailasha actually. Prashantilam becomes that Kailasha. And you are sitting at the feet of Shiva Sai.
Right.
And you are experiencing that Shiva consciousness, that bliss of Shiva.
So he is to become bliss and he takes all of us into bliss.
Absolutely.
So beautiful.
You never want this chance to end.
No, we do not. Even during Shivratri also, I always used to feel so happy listening to this as you described it so beautifully and looking at Swami and listening to his praises and his glory and his beauty and everything. I'm very happy. We used to be very happy. At the same time, there's always a thought, oh my God, it's going to end sometime. If not now, after a while. And you never want them to end.
Yeah.
You want it to go on.
There is something about these chants.
Yes.
You just want them to go on forever because it just fills you with so much peace.
గంగా తరంగ రమణీయ జటాకలాపం గౌరీ నిరంతర విభూషిత వామభారం నారాయణ ప్రియ మనంగ మదాపహారం వారాణసి పురపతిం భజ విశ్వనాథ వాసామ గోచర అనేక గుణస్వరూపం ఆగీష విష్ణు సురసేవిత పాదపీఠం వామేన విగ్రహ వరేణ కలత్ర బంధం వారాణసీపురపతిం భజ విశ్వనాథం భూతాతిపంబుజగభూషణ భూషితాంగం వ్యాఘ్రాదీనాంబరధరం జటిలం త్రినేత్రం పాశాంకుశాభయవర ప్రదశూలవారి వారాణసీపురపతిం భజ విశ్వనాథం సీతాశోభిత కిరీట విరాజమానం పాలేశనానల విశోషిత పంచవానం నాగాది పారచిత బాసుర కర్ణపూరం వారాణసీపురపతిం భజ విశ్వనాథం.
Even when we listen to those chants when we are alone or at home, even then they are so powerful and they take you to a different dimension. And right. Imagine listening to them, looking at Swami sitting in front of you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Amazing. In fact, as you mentioned, this thought came that I think there will be many people who will be doing that when their mind is disturbed. You just listen to this chant.
Yes.
You will instantly be rewarded with peace.
Yes. You feel uplifted and lighter.
Lighter. And the beauty of Shivratri, as you mentioned, is on one hand, you had these chants in the morning, which described this most unusual and, you know, seemingly unreal form of Shiva, isn't it?
Yes.
It's a very unreal form, isn't it? You know, you have the moon on his head and you have the Ganges coming out of his head, a river coming out of his head and there's a moon. In fact, when I was a very little one, I used to have these weird thoughts. If the moon is there, then that should be Shiva's head should be there.
Somewhere in the clouds.
Somewhere in the clouds. You know, it's a very, very mysterious form, isn't it? But in the evening, I remember, before the Akhanda Bhajan or after the Akhanda Bhajan, when Bhagwan used to speak, there he used to explain the significance of this beautiful form, you know. We describe that form, but why the form
is the way it is.
The way it is. And what is it that it symbolizes?
What is he trying to teach by being
that,
the way
that
he is?
That used to come so beautifully in his discourses.
So again, Swami explaining about his own form.
Absolutely.
When you say this, I am reminded of one beautiful shloka, Bishu. This is from Natya Shastra.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It goes on to explain or elaborate on Shiva's form. As we all know, Shiva is the god of dance.
Mm.
So first they offer their salutations to Lord Shiva. It goes something like this. I'm going to read out the shlokam. Angikam bhuvanam yasya, vachikam sarva vangmayam, aharyam chandra taradi, tam vande sattvikam shivam. Which means, we bow to the sattvik Shiva, Shiva who is pure sattvikness, and whose body, angikam means body, whose body is the world itself, whose vachikam, vachikam meaning speech, whose vachikam is a universal language, as Swami says, language of the heart, and whose aharyam, the ornaments, are none other than the moon and the stars.
Wow. So his ornaments are the moon and the stars. His speech is a universal language.
Yeah.
His body is this whole universe.
Whole world, universe. To that form of Lord Shiva, who is pure sattvika guna, we offer our salutations. This is how the shloka goes.
His absolute auspiciousness.
Auspiciousness. And he is an epitome of sereneness and calmness and beauty. So if we look at Shiva's form, yes, as you rightly mentioned, it is very enigmatic and mysterious. Let us, from whatever Swami had been kind enough to enlighten us about the form of himself, let us try to look at a few aspects of Shivana. He is represented as having three eyes, the Trinetra.
Yeah.
One with three eyes. So what is this third eye? What does it represent? It is said that the third eye also represents cosmic knowledge.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. So if you look at it, Bhakti Marga, Karma Marga and Jnana Marga, all the Jnana that or the wisdom that one aspires to achieve or attain or get is with him. He can grant that wisdom to you in a split second if he feels that you are ready for it. So all the cosmic knowledge and wisdom is the controller of all of that. And not only that, the three eyes of Shiva also depicts the three kalas, the time, three yes. time frames, which are namely past, present and future. And that means he is kalatita. He cannot be controlled by time. He is the one who controls time.
Yes.
And he is also the one who transcends time.
Yes.
So isn't it beautiful that we only look at him Trinetra, we chant, and but if we can dwell a little more on his form, he has a lot to teach. And let us go to the weapon. Shiva very interestingly has a trident with three angles and three spikes. So what does the trident denote? It shows that he is here to eliminate the three gunas, sattva, rajas, tamo gunas, of his devotees or followers. Because the ultimate aim of human birth and any human being, for that matter any living being, is finally to attain the Lord, to reach the source, to become one with the Paramatma. And Paramatma is attributeless, he is nirguna.
Gunatita.
He doesn't have any gunas. And with so much of sattva, rajas, tamo gunas, we are filled with that. How do we reach him? Yes. It will be tough for us to reach him. So in all his mercy and kindness, he is here with his trident to eliminate all these three gunas from
even
us.
Even sattva has to be transcended.
Yes. Even
to reach
yes,
the Lord.
Naturally, if you want to reach someone who is attributeless, you have to be closer to at least that.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
In any guna is an attribute. Any guna, you need to possess it. Unless you become empty.
If you have an attribute, any guna, then you build karma.
You build karma. Mm-hmm. Unless we are empty and we are nothing, we cannot get everything.
So that is the significance of the trident.
Trident. And look at the love of the Lord. Even with his weapon, he is only trying to protect us.
Yes.
And his body is smeared with ashes or vibhuti. That only shows he is constantly giving us a message, very strong message. Everything is temporary. Nothing is permanent in this world that you see around you. Non-permanence of everything. And then he drapes a tiger skin around his waist. A tiger is also a very strong and powerful
strong,
animal.
Yes.
If you see a tiger, I mean a live tiger in a national park, it's so huge.
Yeah, it's ferocious.
It's very ferocious. It doesn't bother about what is happening
fearless.
Around it. It's fearless. It is fearless because it's so very powerful.
Yes.
And it depicts strength. That's why Goddess Durga, she rides a tiger. Her
yes.
vehicle is a tiger.
Yes.
And when she went to war with the demons,
yes.
Mahishasura and his
yes.
Army, she rode a tiger.
Yes.
Only to tell them that I am more powerful than all of you. I am okay. going to conquer all of you. Because I am riding the most powerful animal.
Mm.
Okay. So it also represents a force of
yes.
Strength. But the Lord Shiva wears a tiger skin. When do you get a tiger skin? Only when it is dead.
Yes.
Right?
When you have conquered it.
When you had conquered it. In other words. Yes. So he is only telling us that no power is more powerful than me. And no strength of force can conquer me. I will be bound only by love. Not force, not power, not strength. He is the Pashupati. The one who had conquered all the Pashu or the animal tendencies.
Om Mahaprana Deepam Shivam Shivam Mahukara Rupam Shivam Shivam Mahasurya Santaninetram Pavitram Mahadradatimirantakam Sauragatram Mahakanti Bijam Mahadevya Tejam Bhavani Sametam Bhajiman Om Namo Om నమః శంకరాయ చ మయస్కరాయ చ నమః శివాయ చ శివతరాయ చ భవహరాయ చ మహాప్రాణదీపం శివం శివం భజే మంజునాథం శివం శివం మద్వైత భాస్కరం మర్దనారీశ్వరం త్రిదశ హృదయంగమం చతుర్దశి సంగమం పంచభూతాత్మకం షట్చక్రునాశకం సప్తస్వరేశ్వరం అష్టసిద్ధీశ్వరం నవరస మనోహరం దశదిశాసు విమలం ఏకాదశోజ్వలం ఏకనాథేశ్వరం ప్రస్తుతి శంకరం ప్రణత జనకింకరం దుర్జన భయంకరం సజ్జన శుభంకరం వాణి భవతారకం ప్రకృతి హృత తారకం భువన భవ్య భవనాయకం భాగ్యాత్మకం రక్షకం ఏషం సురేశం విశేషం పరేశం నటేశం గౌరీశం గణేశం భూతేశం మహామధుర పంచాక్షరీ మంత్రమాచం మహర్షవర్ష ప్రపర్షోతు శీర్షో నమో హరాయ చ హరహరాయ చ పురహరాయ చ రుద్రాయ చ భద్రాయ చ ఇంద్రాయ చ నిత్యాయ చ నిర్నిద్రాయ చ మహాప్రాణదీపం శివం శివం.
అండ్ శివ హ్యాజ్ నంది యాజ్ హిజ్ వెహికల్. నంది ఈజ్ అ బుల్ అండ్ యూ కెన్ టేమ్ ఎ కౌ, బట్ టు టేమ్ ఎ బుల్ ఈజ్ వెరీ వెరీ డిఫికల్ట్. సో హీ షోస్ దట్ హీ హెడ్ టేమ్డ్ అ బుల్ అండ్ అ బుల్ రిప్రజెంట్స్ హియర్ ద హ్యూమన్ మైండ్ విత్ ఆల్ ఇట్స్ నెగటివ్ టెండెన్సీస్, యానిమల్ క్వాలిటీస్, ఎవ్రీథింగ్. సో ద లార్డ్ ఈజ్ టెలింగ్ అస్ దట్ ఐ కెన్ టేమ్ యువర్ మైండ్, ఇట్ ఈస్ నాట్ టఫ్ ఫర్ మీ. అండ్ వెరీ ఇంట్రెస్టింగ్లీ బిషు, ఐ హెడ్ బీన్ టు అరుణాచలం రీసెంట్లీ ఇన్ ద ఫస్ట్ వీక్ ఆఫ్ ఫిబ్రవరి. I was there for a few days and it was my annual trip to Arunachala. And Arunachala is one of the Panchabhuta Lingas, you know that. The Agni Linga is Arunachala. Beautiful Shiva temple. In that temple, there are three Nandis. Usually in every Shiva temple, there will be a Nandi right in front of the sanctum sanctorium and is very, very peacefully sitting there and looking at undivided attention on the Lord. And in this temple, there are three Nandis. A very huge Nandi as soon as you enter the temple premises compound. And as you go on, another Nandi which is a little smaller in size. And as you reach the sanctum, there is another Nandi which is smallest. So, I was thinking about it and then I realized that, you know, he's conquering your mind and taming your mind in such a way that as you go closer to him, it ceases to exist. It becomes smaller and smaller in front of him. And he tames the mind so, you know, so powerfully, and he tames the mind so deftly that at one point it ceases to exist and that's when we can get closer to the Lord. And I felt very, very happy to see this
transformation of the
transformation.
Smaller and smaller.
And smaller.
It's like the moon waning, you know.
Right.
See, that's also very interesting, isn't it? You have a very waned moon on Shiva's side. It's like the mind is at
exactly.
Its peace. So here also you see the Nandis reducing in size, mm-hmm. just to show that how in the presence of Shiva, all your bestial tendencies are completely subdued.
Right. And if we surrender our mind to him, he will conquer it and he will control the most difficult to control tendencies also. It's only that it's our willingness to offer it to him. Lord is always very patiently waiting for us.
Yes. In fact, the other thing also about, since you mentioned about Nandi, the most fantastic thing about Nandi is the one-pointed concentration.
Concentration, yes. Undivided attention.
Undivided concentration. In fact, because of that undivided concentration of the Lord, that Nandi has raised itself to the stature of being a messenger to the Lord, a medium to the Lord. When people have their wishes, they go and, you know, tell it in the ear of the Nandi.
Right.
Because they feel, because Nandi's attention of the Lord is so straight and so undivided, so focused, that if you have to communicate anything to the Lord, tell it to the Nandi, it will go straight because there is nothing in the way.
Yes. And one more practice is there in, at least when I was a kid, my mother used to tell me, and I had seen many people doing this. When we go to a Shiva temple, they ask us to see the Shivaling.
Yes.
From in between the horns of the Nandi.
Nandi.
You have to put your hand on both the horns and then see the Shivaling from in between the Nandi, you know, because that is how focused we need to be on the Lord. we cannot see anything else. If you have to see from that small space, you can only see the Lord. So that is how our focus should be. Nothing else around Him should matter to us.
Fantastic. And when you also think about it, Nandi, as you mentioned, it's a beast. Because of its concentration of the Lord, it rose to be a messenger of the Lord.
Messenger of the Lord. And in fact, a beast had become an example for us, for all the human beings.
Fantastic. I mean, there are so many things to learn. Bhagwan, in the Shivratri discourses, used to narrate so many such insights. Every Shivratri discourse had some very beautiful insights. And I think when you chant these mantras and as you sing these, when you think about these attributes of the Lord, you know, what each name signifies and what it means, you know, then that whole experience of chanting these mantras itself becomes such a cleansing experience, right? It elevates you now not just for their power in their intonation and in their lyrics, but you are elevated because of the potency of what it conveys. You know, once that happens, not only your senses, your mind, your chittam, your everything gets actually elevated.
Right.
It becomes really cleansed, isn't it? The whole experience becomes a very, very purifying experience.
Thank you.
were talking about understanding these attributes of Shiva's form in the light of Swami's teachings. And you know, when I also look at the Shiva's form, to me, somehow, it seems like it's a very cryptic and comprehensive elaboration of the creation. And that Shiva's form, it is just creation depicted in that beautiful form.
Exactly. As the shloka says, Angikam Bhuvanam Yasya.
Yes.
His body is the whole universe.
Yeah. And see, what is creation? If you see, creation is full of opposites, isn't it? There is yin and yang. There is positive and negative. And Bhagwan, in fact, says that Shiva and Shakti, they are the two powers that is responsible for creation. You know, Prakriti and Purusha. In one discourse, Bhagwan went on to explain that the Pranava Mantra Om, it has within it both these powers of Shiva and Shakti.
Oh.
Om has within it the powers of Shiva and Shakti. And Swami says, this is what corresponds to the scientists talking about electron and proton, the two constituents of the atom. And Swami says the proton forms the nucleus of the atom and the electron is moving at a great speed around the proton. And Swami says the Vedas have described this phenomenon in different ways.
You know,
before the scientists told us now, 1500 years ago. And what this is actually the Shiva and Shakti inextricably associated with each other.
So they are there, all pervading there.
They are all pervading. So when you look at Shiva, you see that he is such a beautiful conglomeration of both these forces that make the universe, you know. You see the best of positive, you also see the heights of negativity. Everything is there in that form. Like for example, you have Ganga flowing out of Shiva's head, you know, the cool Ganga. And at the same time, you have the third eye open, which is just fire.
Right.
You have fire and water just next to each other. At the same time, Ganga is life-giving, but his body is smeared with ash. You know, and ash represents the end of everything.
Right.
Again, see, his matted hair and that attire shows that he's an ascetic.
He's a sannyasi.
He's a sannyasi, you know. But Shiva has Shakti next to him. You know, Shakti next to him.
Not only next to him, he had given half of his body to Shakti.
Yeah, yes. And Shiva would do anything for Shakti.
Yeah.
For the love that Shakti has for Shiva. In fact, the way Shakti attained Shiva is itself another story by itself. Such a profound story. It's in fact the story of every Jivatma to Paramatma.
Ganga Dhara Gauri Shiva. Ganga Dhara Gauri Shiva.
Because of that much love that Shakti had for Shiva, now Shiva gave half of himself. So you see in Shiva, he looks like a renunciant, the perfect renunciant. At the same time, he is an epitome of love. He is the best householder. And he has a lovely family. And a family, again, which is full of opposites.
Contradictions. Right. So true. Actually, the world itself is full of diversities, but then there is an inherent unity in that. And if we look at it, the nature itself, you know, shows us so many examples. If we look at our hand, all the five fingers are of not the same size and height. They're all different. In the same way, in our family, our siblings, or for that matter, our own kids, they are so different from us. They're not exactly like us. They're their own people. So much of differences. But then, there is a unity, there is a love, there is affinity among all of these people. And that's what makes a family as a unit. Let's see what Lord Shiva's family is teaching us or trying to teach us. If you look at Shiva, Shiva is called Pannagadhara, Nagabhushana. He has a serpent, a very venomous serpent around his neck. But his son, Ganesha, he has as his vehicle a rat. And we know snakes relish rats. And his other son, Subramanya, his vehicle is a peacock.
Yes.
And snakes and peacocks are
sword enemies.
Enemies. They cannot stand each other's sight. And his consort, Shakti, she is called Simha Vahini because she rides a lion. Again, their son Ganesha, he is called Gajanana because he has an elephant head. He is elephant faced. And elephant cannot stand the sight of lion even in a dream. In fact, it is believed, Pishu, that if an elephant dreams of a lion, it will go mad. And here is the mother whose vehicle is a lion and the son with an elephant head. Not only that, Shiva's vehicle itself is a bull. And lion and bull, they
lion
don't
cannot resist the sight of a bull.
No. But if we look at all these animals, they are so very peacefully and devotedly sitting at their master's feet.
Yes.
And it's a family unit.
Yes.
Shakti is adorned in all the finery of ornaments and everything. And her lord Shiva, he is the simplest of ascetics.
Yes.
In fact, he is called Digambara. The only robe that he wears is a tiger skin around his waist. In fact, his family is full of opposites and contradictions. But then we see integration, coordination, and great love among each other as a family unit. You know, they operate as a unit. And maybe this is what the Lord had been trying to teach us through.
So don't complain if there are certain wavelengths in your family not matching between different members.
No, you know? That is the beauty of God's creation.
That's the beauty.
It's not stereotyped.
We have to only look at it as that is how creation is and that is how God designed it. And if Shiva's family can be like that, it is the divinely ordained family.
Yes.
And if it is like that, then we should be able to live with this.
Exactly. Imagine how our mothers would have felt if ourselves and our siblings are all of the same nature and same kind. And how would I feel if all my kids are of the same nature, same type? What is the challenge? How do we learn? We only learn when we face challenges.
The world will be such a boring place.
It would be very boring. Yes. And
he wants only vibrancy.
Yes. And he will only see that whatever chances he has to make us grow and learn in life, he will never lose them.
Never lose them, yes. I think that is really interesting. There is so much to learn, as you said, from Shiva's family. And again, you know, when you look at the form, I'm really always mesmerized at Shiva's form because the more you think about it, the more you dwell on it.
The more we learn.
The more you learn, the more it stupefies you. Like, for example, again, you see, there is poison in his throat, you know.
And Neelakanta.
Neelakanta. There is poison in his throat. And poison is something which, it will take your life.
Yes.
And again you have Ganga, which is actually life giving.
Elixir of life.
Elixir of life. So, you have something which gives you life. Because, you know, even in Mars and other planets, they are only searching for water.
Water.
If water is there, then life will be there.
Right.
So, you have poison, you have something which gives life, and you have something which takes life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again in Shiva's form, and as you very rightly mentioned, you know, everything, you have the most dangerous of creatures, and you have the most gentlest of creatures. You see all the forces in nature, in Shiva. And you also find a great representation of everything in creation, you know. Like the flora and the fauna, you have representation of the animal kingdom, you have represents from the humankind. You have his Ganas who are not really actually humans.
Right.
You have a representation. Also, Bilva leaf is offered. You have representation from the plant kingdom. So, he is just that symbol of creator and creation. That is what is Shiva. And so much is packed in that bewildering, beautiful form. So difficult to ever try to fathom his form, isn't it?
Shivadam Shivanamam Shri Parvati Sharanam Shivadam Shivanamam Shri Parvati Sharanam Shivadam Shivacharitam Papaharam Nandi Nandani Nagarangita Kailasheshwaranam Shivadam
శివనామం శ్రీ పార్వతీశ్వర నామం విగతం శివనామం శ్రీ పార్వతీశ్వర నామం ప్రేమ పూర్ణం పార్వతీ లోలనం కరుణయా సఫలమీ జీవితం ప్రేమ పూర్ణం పార్వతీ లోలనం కరుణయా కుళ్ళిలిరగిరున్న లోకదాత్రియా శివగంగా
We cannot really understand him, can we? He cannot be understood by intelligence or by studying of scriptures. No. The principle that I followed in my life is, if I try to understand him, I will lose a lot of time. Instead of that, if I try to love him with all the time that I have, then maybe, you know, he will give me enough wisdom to know what I need to do to reach him. Ultimately, why do you want to understand God? Only to attain him, right?
Yes.
And he cannot be understood by human intelligence.
That is why the Vedas have told he is timeless, spaceless, birthless, deathless, decayless. He is neither light nor darkness, neither form nor energy, neither sound nor matter. And that beautiful phrase, you know, he is dvandvatita. He is not only these opposites, he is beyond the opposites. Beyond the pair of opposites. So, he is the one who is this prakriti, who is the maya. And again, he is the one who is the wielder of this Maya.
Right. As the Vedam says, Mayantu Prakritim, Mayinantu Maheshwaram. That means, know that Prakriti is Maya and Maheshwara to be the wielder of Maya or Prakriti. He cannot be seen by eyes, but the Supreme Lord is very easy to please. You know, he is very easy to please because he is bound by only one thing in this universe. And of course, that is the most powerful vibration and energy of the universe. And that is love. By the love of a devotee and pure devotion, heartfelt devotion towards him, the Lord is ready to give himself to the devotee.
I think that is the path that was followed, right, by so many Shaivite saints.
Yes.
You know, even though they described the Lord and even though they sang in praise of the Lord, they only tried to love him. That's all. You didn't want to explain him. You didn't try to understand him.
You just love him.
You just love him. And I think through that, as Bhagwan, you know, very beautifully says that through love, you will attain the jnana as well as the fruit of jnana. If you try to just understand, probably you will get a bit of jnana. But through love, you will get jnana and the fruit of jnana. So I think there are a lot of these Shaivite saints, that's what they did, isn't it?
True. The interesting fact that, as you mentioned, is he is very, very easy to please. Actually, God is very easy to please. He doesn't need any big show of, you know, rituals and all of this. And even in our Shrutis, it is said that every form of God has a particular specified ritual to please him. It is said that Vishnu, Alankara Priya Vishnu, and Abhishekha Priya Shiva. That means Vishnu is very, very fond of being adorned with lot of jewels and other ornaments and stuff. Whereas Shiva is happy with an Abhishekam. If you see in any Shiva temple, there will be a copper pot with a hole in the center and they'll pour water into that. And that water will be falling on the Shivalingam day and night. Abhishekam is performed all through the time. And another interesting fact is, in so many Shiva temples, the devotees can do Abhishekam by themselves. They can go worship their Lord with the ritual that is most dearest to him, the Abhishekam. So he is very, very easy to please, and that's why he is called Bholenath. Bhola is someone who is so innocent that he can be so easily pleased.
course, we have so many stories in the Puranas where so many demons have got boons from Lord Shiva.
Shiva.
So easily, because it's so easy to propitiate him.
Yes.
And whatever you ask, he will just grant it.
He will grant, right.
He was the one who gave all the powers to Ravana.
He will grant anything to his devotees. He is that easily pleasable. And then sometimes the devotees even, come back at him with the boons that are given by him.
Yes.
So, if we look at Shaivite saints, they are called Nayanmars. There are 63 of them. And all of these, most of these saints and most of them, in fact, we can say all of them, had only followed the path of love. And their love is so great that the Lord got pleased with them and He had lifted them to the stature of, if we go to any famous and very big Shiva temples, usually in Tamil Nadu we see a lot of very big Shiva temples. Arunachalam is a very big temple and Chidambaram is a bigger temple. If you go to any temple, the so-called bhaktas are there in the compound of the temple. Whereas in Arunachalam, I had found that wherever the sanctum sanctorium is there, the pradakshina marga, where you go around the sanctum, in the same wall, in the same compound, is the Nayanmars. 63 Nayanmars are placed there for people to worship them.
Wow.
So he kept them next to him.
Mm.
He had given them a stage where they can stay next to him and be worshipped and admired by his devotees.
Mm.
He had made them examples of pure love and devotion. And all the stories of this Nayanmars is compiled. And this compilation is called Periya Puranam.
Yes, very famous.
Very famous. It has all the stories, life stories of all the 63 Nayanmars. In fact, it is so powerful and so inspiring that a copy of Periya Puranam was what spurred a little boy called Venkatraman to go to Arunachalam, to reach Tiruvannamalai, the Arunachalam, where he went on to become the great sage of Arunachalam, Bhagwan Ramana Maharshi.
Wow.
So that is the kind of inspiration we get from the saints' lives.
Fantastic. In fact, I know as you're talking about the Shaivite saints and people who have attained Shiva consciousness, that name that comes to your mind is the name of Saint Manika Vasagar. It is almost like when you talk about Rama Bhakti, you think about Saint Tyagaraja.
Yes.
No, he's an epitome of Rama Bhakti.
Rama Bhakti.
On the similar lines, when you think about Shaivite saints, you think about saints like Kannappa. You think about saints like Manika Vasagar.
Yes.
And if you look at the story of Manika Vasagar, it is so fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Just like every saint's story.
Yes.
He was born in Wadavur, and which is about in modern day 25 kilometers northeast of Madurai.
Madurai.
And Madurai at that time was the capital of the Pandya kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And he was born to Brahmin parents who were also Shiva devotees. And the place is Tiruvadavur.
Mm-hmm.
According to one version, Tiruvadavur got that name. Tiru means sacred, isn't
sacred,
it?
Sacred, yes.
You know, it got that sacred connotation to its name because apparently scholars of different religions, they used to come and assemble there and have discussions and debates on religion and spirituality.
Uh-oh.
That's how that place got that name. And there's a very, very rich spiritual tradition in that place. And apparently it was originally called as Vedapuri.
Mm-hmm.
And the deity there was known as Vedapurishwarar.
Oh.
And later that Vedapuri got corrupted to Vadapuri.
Mm-hmm.
Vadapuri. And then Vadavur.
Vadavur.
And because Manika Vasagar was born in Vadavur, he was called as Vadavurar.
Vadavurar.
The one perhaps who belongs to Vadavur.
Vadavur, yes.
And he was some sort of a prodigy who was very good in school and he learned his subjects very well. Not only that, there was something about him that always charmed everyone, that always made him endearing to everyone because all his mannerisms, his behavior was so good. His character was something which shone so beautifully even though he was very small. People loved the way he conducted himself. There's something always very special about him.
Mm-hmm.
And it is said that as he grew to become a gentleman and given his intelligence as well as his character, he was somehow known. He
very
was
well
known for his personality.
Mm-hmm.
You have ability and you have integrity.
Integrity.
Integrity. That is how his character shone. And the Pandya king at that time, Harimardana Pandya. He comes to know about Vadavurar.
Oh, the king himself
comes to know. And he calls him. And the king is so impressed with him that he gives him the post of being his prime minister.
Oh.
So he becomes the prime minister of the king. And the king gives him a title, Tennavan Brahmarayan, which means the leader among Brahmins in the south.
Oh, okay.
That is the title that the king gives him. And you know, when I think about it, we do not have much accounts of what he did before he got this position. Because I am thinking that definitely he would have done some things which have really impressed the king.
Right.
Or definitely he would have conducted in particular situations in some exceptional ways. And that is the reason why people adored him so much. But unfortunately, we don't have much accounts of that part of his life.
Right. For the king to appoint him directly as the prime minister.
Yes.
Of the Pandya kingdom.
Something he would have seen.
Something he would have seen. In fact, when you say that, I am reminded of a story that I had read. Swami had narrated this story. Swami went on to say that one day, Manikya Vachakar was on his way from one place to another. He was walking and it became dark suddenly and it started to rain. It was a downpour. By the time it was night and there was no place for him to stay, and it was a alien place, it was not a known place. And he found that there's a small portico of a house, an extension of the house, a small portico. The people of the house are sleeping inside the house. It was dark and he went and reached that portico, and he also stretched himself and he lied down there because he knew that it's going to rain for a while now and he has to continue his journey only after the rain stops. Some time passes and then he sees, he hears a sound and he wakes up, he gets up. He sees another person running for shelter who was caught in the rain. So he gets up and he calls him, please come here, there is shade here, you can stay here. And he welcomes that person. He says, it's a very small portico. So the other person is a little hesitant. Says, it's okay, no problem. Till now, this portico is enough for one person to sleep. Now it will be enough for two people to sit. So, not a problem. Please come. Join me. So, they both are sitting there and doing some namasmarana. And then, again they see one more person. Manikya Vachakar sees another person running for shelter. And he calls him also. He calls him and the second guy is a little surprised. Now, where will he put him? And there is no place here. So, Manikya Vachakar calls him and he tells him, see, till now there is place for two of us to sit. Now, there will be place for three of us to stand.
Oh.
So, please come and join us. And saying that, Swami ends the story saying this is the true characteristic of a devotee.
Oh, wow.
A devotee feels, he is empathetic towards others. He is not sympathetic. He feels the pain of others. He can see the trouble the others are in. And he is not only ready to do anything to lessen their trouble, but he is even ready to forego whatever comforts and convenience he has to make sure that the other person is also comfortable. And it's a very beautiful story that Swami
amazing.
Related.
Because Swami has shared this one thing, at least we know something.
Something about, yeah.
About
his character and his compassion.
His personality and his compassion. In fact, I am reminded of what Dalai Lama once said. He said, if you want others to be happy, practice compassion.
Okay.
And if you want yourself to be happy, practice compassion.
So if we practice compassion, it will make us also happy.
Definitely it will make others happy.
It will make others happy.
It will make us also happy.
Happy.
You know, that's what, that is that happiness that Manikya Vachakar, at that time, Vadavurar experienced.
Yes.
He did it because he was happy.
Right.
He was happy practicing compassion, practicing empathy. And if you see the scriptures and what is dharma, you know, ahimsa paramo dharma.
Right.
Dharma is what? To practice non-violence, to live such a life that you don't hurt anyone.
Hurt or harm anybody.
Including yourself.
In fact, Swami also says so many times, dayaku minchina dharmamu ledu. There is no bigger dharma than compassion.
Compassion. Manikya Vachakar had this.
Had this.
Great. I mean, no wonder if you are intelligent and you also are compassionate, there is no question of your ascendancy.
Right.
Wherever you are, whichever field you are. So dear listeners, that was the first part of our discussion on Saint Manikya Vachakar. We will continue this in the subsequent episodes of this series, Saints, the Soul of India. And we will go on to dwell on the life of this amazing saint who so beautifully melted into Lord Shiva. We have begun this series on the life of this saint just before Shivaratri, and I pray to Bhagwan that we continue to dwell on those sublime thoughts and make our life a penance and make our love a worship. Thank you so much for being with us all through the day. I'm Team Lady Sai's Bishu, and as I sign off, we offer our gratitude to Bhagwan for everything that he means to us and this opportunity to be of service to him. As I sign off, you will continue to listen to drama by the Balvikas, by the MBA students of Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, which was presented on 8 July 2007, Sa Vidya Ya Vimuktai. So happy listening. Thank you so much, and Sai Ram.